This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 246. Can you hear me? A deep dive into voice and chat in the Microsoft Cloud, recorded live April 3rd, 2018.
Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, workflows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC.
Hey, AC, are you there? AC? Can you hear me now?
Oh, I'm sorry, I was on mute. Can you hear me? I think you're on mute. Can you see my video? Oh, my
ding,
video?
A call has left the meeting.
There goes our listeners.
CJ is joining the meeting.
Hey, welcome back, CJ.
Hello? Hello?
I like that.
Okay, we've paid our meeting tax.
Oh man, isn't it royal pain?
Oh, dude, it's terrible, isn't it?
Oh, it really is. It really is. You got those parodies that happen online about what's a conference call like, and it doesn't get any better.
No, it's absolute misery. So we are going to talk a little bit about that today, about the state of voice and chat in the Microsoft Cloud and what your options are and where things are going in the future and kind of how we got to where we're at and what your options are today and what's going to be forced down your throat in the future. So, but first, how have you been? You were traveling last week.
Yeah, it was. It feels like, I know we just recorded an episode 2 weeks ago, but I was listening to an episode recently that you did with the Overcast guys. And first of all, great episode, but it really is, it feels like we haven't done a show together in a long time, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of wild. I guess a lot's been happening in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And apologies to our listeners for my episode last week. You know, it was basic news and bits and pieces, but not normally as exciting as having both of us on the show. So, So back to regular programming is good.
Hey, I did one a couple weeks ago. So those noises you hear in the background, this is I know it's infuriating to CJ. I know it's not.
Oh my God, it's just continuing. I don't know how to make it stop. I can't make it stop.
So CJ is having a problem with his laptop, even though, and trust me, we know what we're doing, or we think we do, but it's funny because he's got his headphones on, but his laptop, and we use an external mics when we do our episodes. But his laptop refuses to put notifications out through anything other than his speakers on his laptop. So we've done everything you're supposed to do to get all the sound to come through your earphones. But yeah, they're coming through the speakers. So the last few episodes,
I just can't figure it out.
We cannot guarantee or confirm that you're missing meetings when you're listening to our episode. But the last few episodes, it's been us.
Yeah, no doubt. And what makes this even better is I've got Do Not Disturb turned on.
It's like Leave Me Alone on a Mac for when you're like presenting or something. But yeah, so it's supposed to shut all that stuff up. But
yeah, oh man. And yes, I'm on Mac OS right now, and this is where I have the issue. Most of our listeners will be on Windows and will have suffered the same issues because I know it kind of exists over there. But for whatever reason, I cannot figure out how to make the notifications stop making dinging. So I apologize.
No worries, man. Yeah, so last week I was out of town. I was unavailable. I was actually, when we normally record, I was in the middle of giving a presentation. I was giving a presentation at the SP Fest conference up in Washington, D.C., or up in Washington, D.C. for me, and comboed with it like being a family vacation / work trip. And I got to tell you, it's been I've been to Washington, D.C. like 3 times, I think, in my life. This was the first time that I was able to go up as somebody who actually understood what I was seeing, but also with like tourists and sightseeing in mind. The other times I was there on business and like, oh, let's go see the air and space while I'm there, or let's go see this, let's go see that. this time was able to walk around my kids, and it was really neat. You know, we showed up the day that the, I think it was a March for Our Lives protest or march was going on with all the guns and schools and all that stuff. It actually affected our ride in from the airport. But we got there as it was finishing, dropped our bags, and then went to down to the White House and saw still a bunch of people protesting, holding up signs and stuff. It was a really good opportunity to have like Second Amendment conversations with my kids, which is the right to bear arms, First Amendment, right to free speech. Well, you get a couple of rights, but right to free speech, right to assemble are some of the things that you can do. It was really good to have those, like, we had some really deep educational life kind of conversations with our kids that, I mean, all week it was nuts. And I'll say one thing, we had a ton of fun though, man. We got to see, go tour the Capitol, Library of Congress, Supreme Court, ton of museums, Dulles, a lot of stuff. But two things really stood out to me the entire week. Well, three things. One, I got to check off. Now I've got my entire checklist of space shuttles. I've seen all shuttles fly except for Enterprise. And I've seen all four shuttles that are now, that are remaining, that are on display. I've now seen them all. I have not seen Enterprise at its current resting
spot. Current location, but yeah, previous resting spot. Yeah.
Yep. So that's one. Two was, anybody who's in Washington, D.C., you got to go see a it's the only private museum. It's called the Newseum. And it's a museum on news. And we were there for 4 hours and didn't realize it. It is a roller coaster of emotions. You start by seeing a couple sections of the Berlin Wall. You can walk around the other side of it. So you see one side graffiti, which is the West Berlin. Mm-hmm. The other side, no graffiti, which is East Berlin. They have one of the watchtowers, or one of the gun towers from Checkpoint Charlie. It's a roller coaster. There were parts of it where, you get really emotional. September, it brings you back to September 11th. Mm-hmm. Great museum. And then the other one, though, that I thought was really cool, Jason Himmelstein actually suggested this one night, and then I went back and took my kids there. We went and did the Lincoln and Washington and Einstein memorials, statues at night. And man, it is so special being there at night.
That's awesome. Yep. Yeah, those are incredible. I was there for, I think it was a WPC perhaps or something like that a few years ago, and did that night walk as well down along the mall. Mm-hmm. I think. And is that what they call it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Down to the memorial and things. And it was beautiful. It's great seeing it at night. What a great trip.
Oh, it was great. Well, my watch said we did 49 miles of walking.
I saw a few photos of very tired children. So.
Oh, man. They got to move, man. They got to move. They can sleep later.
Exactly. Hey, well, good. That sounds like a really fun trip.
Yeah, it was. How about you? What's up with you?
Oh, mine is way less exciting. I've been diving into AKS, Azure Container Service, and the preview of that and how it's going. And it's not as interesting as the Lincoln Memorial, but interesting in other ways. Yeah. It's a really good service. There are a lot of issues with it right now, though, so I hope they get those resolved before the preview is finished. I think it's supposed to be soon, but yeah, I don't know. Like, often their replies are, create a new cluster.
Ooh, that's
so that's not good. But anyway, it's shaping up to be a really good service. And so I'm doing a prototype of running the entire Hyperfish service on AKS using, so AKS, if you're not familiar with it, it's Kubernetes managed service from Microsoft in Azure. And so I'm using Kubernetes and I'm using Helm, which is kind of a pattern tool for stamping out applications into Kubernetes and upgrading them and managing them and stuff. So I'm using AKS and Helm to do this prototype. And it's really interesting. I'm finding it fascinating.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about it in episode 224, but I'm really interested to hear what you think about this. We ought to do an episode on this specifically because I'm exploring using it to host like a couple different like production things that I'm working on, both for just utilities and also migrating all of my Azure Functions out of Azure Functions over to something called FAS on top of Kubernetes. But it's cool that you're looking at it. I was looking at it a little bit now. So here's the funny part. Why is it that you're exploring putting Hyperfish on AKS? Can you share that?
Oh, yeah. So a couple of weeks ago, I guess now, we got notice that, we run Hyperfish, we use a set of tools to help run it from Docker called Docker Cloud. And there are three parts to Docker Cloud. There's a place where you can build your Docker images, there's a place where you can host your Docker images, and then there's a a SaaS offering from them that help you run your Docker images. And we use all three of those things. And they gave notice that they're shutting down the third of the three, which is the SaaS tool that helps you run Docker images in, well, wherever you want, really. We run them in Azure. Anyway, so there's a set of tools that they provide as a SaaS offering that help you run your Docker images. And that's the tool that they're shutting down in a couple of months' time.
This is like their version of Kubernetes, not Swarm, but yeah. It's like this is their version of Kubernetes or
AWS. It's the orchestration and management tools that help you, spin up containers, network them together, make sure they're up and running, redeploy containers if you need to upgrade them, that sort of stuff. It doesn't actually run our application. If Docker Cloud fell over or wasn't available for whatever reason, our app would still run, obviously, but it helps us run the app. And so that's what they're shutting down. And so we are evaluating our options, and Kubernetes is going to be where we go. It's just a matter of how we run Kubernetes, whether we run it all ourselves or whether we use a managed offering from Azure or a tool like Rancher or who knows what, something along those lines.
That would be cool to see which way you guys go and to hear like what you choose as a solution. I saw some people getting that message that they were going to shut down that part, the orchestrator part of Docker Cloud, and just I heard one of them was like in 2 weeks or like in 2 months or something like that.
Two months. Yeah.
That is a really short time frame for a company that is like you're hosting your entire infrastructure and, oh yeah, by the way, you need to replatform in the next 2 weeks.
Two months. Yeah, it is a really short period of time. And fortunately, we have an extension to that. So we're not subject to the two-month rule. However, it still makes you cringe a little bit when you have to do this work that will be quite a lot of work. Moving tools is always non-trivial. But it's kind of one of those plumbing jobs, you know? It's like if everything goes well, you don't have water all over your floor.
Yeah.
And customers will hopefully not notice at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it is quite a bit of work behind the scenes to switch tools. Fortunately, we don't have to change any of our code. So I already have a prototype up and running on Kubernetes, got that done in a couple of days. It was pretty straightforward. Our Docker images run in Kubernetes just like they run in Docker Swarm or what have you. It's just the way you provision it, and the way you run it, and the way you manage it and things. That's the stuff that changes, not your application code. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. So that's what I'm deep into, learning about Helm, which is an extremely cool tool. But yes, we should definitely do a deep dive on this because I'm learning a lot on it. And I have a great friend who would be a good guest on the show who does this for T-Mobile, in fact. They run a lot of their stuff on Kubernetes and Helm. He'd be great to have on the show to talk about this.
Awesome. Yeah, I'd love to do that. I know I'm interested in doing this. It'd be beneficial for me, but if it's... I won't do my research because then I can hear you present it and then I can ask the questions and be just like one of our listeners.
Yeah, there you go. Excellent.
Awesome.
Hey, so we are going to talk about voice and chat in the cloud today, but we have a couple of news items and things to dive into before we get started with that. So why don't we rattle off through these real quick so we can get onto the meat and potatoes of the show. First one, not Microsoft related, but definitely cloud related. Cloudflare have announced a new DNS service that puts privacy first. So it's called 1.1.1.1. And now, if that doesn't give it away, either you don't know how DNS works or don't care to know, but Cloudflare have launched a new DNS service that is at the address 1.1.1.1. They're saying it's a privacy-first consumer DNS service, so that says a couple of things about it. One, that they're not going to give away your DNS request logs to advertisers or use it for their own advertising to you. So, for example, Google have a DNS service, 8.8.8.8, and 8.8.4.4, I think, is the other one.
Yes, that's true.
So what happens is, even if you're using HTTPS with a web service, you have to find that web server or that web address or whatever first, and a DNS request goes out to go and resolve the DNS name to an IP address. And it's that request which people doing a DNS resolution can see what websites you're doing DNS queries for, obviously. And so there's a theory there that says that this is a gigantic loophole in privacy on the internet and that people doing DNS resolution can basically say, hey, well, you were at this IP address and you requested, Microsoft.com and Azure.com and some shifty website and this service and that service. And so they can sort of build up a profile about what websites you're visiting and things like that based on this. And let's just say that some DNS providers also have a vested interest in selling you advertising, and that may somewhat impact what advertising you see, perhaps. We have no examples of this. I don't, but in theory, that's the case. Anyway, so Cloudflare have come out and said, new DNS service, 1.1.1.1, use this. We won't sell your logs to people. In fact, they're going to scrub their logs, I think, after a few hours or a day or something like that. It's a very short period of time, and we're not going to go sell it to other people. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But if you want, go link off to their blog post about it. It'll tell you all about the privacy problem with DNS and what it can lead to and what they're doing about it with 1.1.1.1.
Very cool.
So I'm going to try it out at home. I haven't switched our office stuff to it yet because it's a brand new service and I want to make sure it works first. But I'm definitely going to use it at home instead of my provider's DNS, which one of the key kind of things behind this is that it's going to be fast. So it's going to be very, very low latency requests, which your DNS requests can make a significant impact on your speed of surfing the web. So it's worth getting a low latency thing.
Yeah. That's the lookup time. When you look, if you look at stuff inside of, like, say, the Google DevTools, Chrome DevTools, you see a lookup time that's going through and querying the DNS. So I've wanted to try it out. I was using my ISP's DNS, and then I switched a couple years ago when I found that there were specific places that my IP's DNS, it would lose, strangely enough, they would all of a sudden block access, or they would not resolve any of the DNS entries for the county school system where I live. And it very strange. I switched our local DNS at our house over to using the two Google DNS entries, and it worked just fine. But it never occurred to me that my lookups could be used for advertising or could be used for some purpose to go through and do that. Which, I mean, to me, that's kind of, I'd like to know that when I put on in private browsing, that it's really not being tracked and stuff. They're not being tracked, and DNS wouldn't fall under the whole DNS bit. So, yeah, I'm thinking about doing the same.
Even if you do it for speed, they talk about this new service having about a 14 millisecond latency versus Cisco's OpenDNS, which is about 20, Google's is about 34, and the average ISP in the States is 68 milliseconds, which doesn't sound like a lot when you say milliseconds, but every little thing that's adding up, and in the middle of this caching and stuff that goes on, but you know, every new address that you look up sort of adds up.
Yep. Yep.
It's really easy to switch. Anyway, so that's 1.1.1.1.
Awesome.
We have some Azure announcements. Do you want to dive into one of those?
Sure. I've got one pretty quick one here. One is, this is coming back from March the 20th. Microsoft has gone GA, general availability, for two database services for managed MySQL and PostgreSQL as well. So these are two good database options. You know, one of the big places here is that I think it's MySQL is the one that WordPress uses, so that WordPress depends on by default. And it's one of the reasons why WordPress has always been a bad hosting option on Azure, because Azure has not had a good MySQL option. You'd have to go through and you have to manage your own version of MySQL or your own instance of it, which, I mean, it's a pain in the butt. So it's nice that now they have an option where they can go through and they manage it. It's a little bit different than doing like SQL Server, where it's much more of a PaaS-based offering. This is like a PaaS offering, but it's not the same thing as like what SQL is. So just two managed database offerings if you're interested in jumping into those. Great for the community too.
Very nice. Okay, one final one before we move on, because we've got to give ourselves some time to chat about voice and chat. But Azure has launched availability zones. So you know how you've got the ability to say, hey, when I've got two VMs, you can put them in an availability set, and so that things won't get rebooted at the same time. So you can give yourself high availability between two within the same data center, but two virtual machines. Mm-hmm. Now they've got the thing called availability zones, which is the ability to say, I want to spread this between zones within a region. So you could say, this needs to be in the first availability zone, this needs to be in the second availability zone, so that if an entire zone drops out off the internet, like a whole data center dies for whatever reason, then another one within the same region can pick it up. So for example, Microsoft, when they have a region, say it was US West or something, there are multiple data centers within that region that they call zones. And previously, you haven't been able to pick how you've spanned your resources across those different zones within a region. So now you can say, hey, this should be in this should be zone tolerant, I guess, fault tolerant across a zone. Yeah. And, you know, it'll make sure that your resources are in different zones within that same region for data center resiliency. And then you can do things like with region pairs so that you've got multi-region redundancy as well. But anyway, so availability zones now augments availability sets and gives you redundancy within a region.
Awesome. Very cool. Yeah,
really nice.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery, from individual items to entire sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
Okay, AC, onto the meat and potatoes. We have.
I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Yes, I can. Sorry. You could argue about why that is. Maybe we'll get into that a little bit in the show. We'll see.
Just a wee bit.
So we haven't talked much about voice and chat in Office 365 or in the Microsoft world for quite a long time. We've been sort of sitting on this topic for a little bit, but we felt like it was about time. And we've been meaning to do this for some time, so I'm really glad we're getting to have a chat about this. But in a nutshell, we want to talk about the world of voice and chat in the Microsoft Cloud. And it's complicated. You've got things across the business world, business and commercial world, and consumer world, for example. You've got phone apps, you've got Skype on desktops, you've got web versions, you've got all this sort of stuff. And it's a complicated mess right now. And Microsoft are doing quite a lot to try and simplify this. But before we dive into like where we're at today and where we're heading tomorrow, why don't we just spend a little bit of time chatting about the history of voice? And I know that you have some particular history with moving stuff around in the past that has caused you angst and no end of pain. So we might touch on that as we go through. But I guess my first experience with voice and IM, you know, goes back to the ICQ days, right? Where ICQ was kind of the leader of the pack, I suppose, or was the first one that really went super popular. But in the Microsoft world, it was Microsoft Messenger, I think it was called originally, right? MSN Messenger.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the commercial setting, it was OCS, so Office Communication Server, was sort of the first professional or business-grade communications product that Microsoft had for on-premises, where you could, you know, deploy it on-prem with a set of servers and things and use it to IM your colleagues and start voice calls with them. And then eventually you could do things like screen sharing and stuff like that as well, I believe, and OCS, I can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was back in, so Microsoft launched that in, I think it was July 2007. And I believe there was an acquisition involved back then. Earlier than that, there was a company called Placeware, I believe it was, that I don't know if it formed the basis of OCS, but it certainly played a big part in the voice and comms product space with Microsoft around that time. And but yeah, it was an acquisition that Microsoft made. But what was your first recollection of voice and IM from Microsoft that you used? Do you remember?
Yeah, I think it's got to be the MSN. The MSN Messenger. I think it was the first thing that I used. It's hard to go back because there have been so many things that have come and gone. You know, first one I ever did was around AOL chat or ICQ, but then I think it was mostly Skype and then MSN. And you found that you were on all these different services. So the next thing was to use, what was it called, Trillion? Remember that?
No, I don't remember that one.
It was like a single sign-on, or not single sign-on, it was a mashup. Kind of like how Outlook lets you log into multiple email addresses. It would let you log into multiple chat applications at once so you could have a unified message window and unified contacts, and it sent the messages wherever you were logged in. Made life easier, but I mean, we'll get a little bit into this, but it sure seems in terms of like voice and video and chat, it sure does feel like things have gotten worse.
Certainly messier, right?
It's messier, and I think, messier and less reliable.
It does feel that way. I can't help but think that some of that is because of the cloud and versus originally, companies would put in these services for voice and video and they would run them, right? So when something went wrong, you'd blame your own company, and they usually wanted to make sure voice was kind of like a mission critical business app.
Yep.
And so there were telephony providers involved and hardcore PBX type solutions and all that sort of stuff. And things were pretty solid. Well, felt reasonably solid in a good organization at least. But I think what's been happening is with the move to the cloud is they've been centralizing some of these services and they're just not as good or not as reliable, it seems, which is, I don't know if that's just perception and what I expect or if it's based in any reality or if it's not based in any reality, but it just feels that way.
Yeah.
So yeah, OCS was my first experience. Placeware actually became a thing called Office Live Meeting, Microsoft Office Live Meeting. Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
And that was really, that was a slightly different offering in that it focused on conducting meetings with a greater number of people, right? So sort of webinars, external meetings, and all that sort of stuff. And we lived in this world for a while where you either had to create a live meeting or like a, or a Link meeting. Like Link, you know, was the new brand that where OCS sort of graduated to Link and Link Server and all that sort of stuff. But live meeting was kind of that, that broadcast medium, if you will. And we ended up in a situation where you could either have a Link meeting or a live meeting. And that was the first time where, for me at least, the voice and video and meeting kind of offerings diverged and became messy.
Yep.
And they've never really gotten super solid since then, in my view.
Well, they haven't from Microsoft, right? I mean, that's that.
Yes.
I think that's
well, that's a big differentiator, yeah.
That's a big piece there where they, they haven't gotten, the Microsoft story isn't like that. I mean, I remember using live, I mean, we used it back when I did Critical Path Training, when we did the when we did our live online classes, we used live meeting for all of our courses that we would end up doing. And there was, I remember there being a huge concern around licensing too. Like, could you do public things or people that were not part of your organization, could they join the meeting? I remember there being a lot of fear around that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was, yeah, it got pretty hokey for sure. And then you add all the branding confusion over the top of all this, right? And so, you know, just going through the names, we've had Office Communication Server, we've had Office Live Meeting, we've had Link and Link Server, obviously, and the Link Client. Then we went to Skype for Business with Skype for Business Server. We've also got Skype for Business Online, and much like the SkyDrive versus SkyDrive for Business or Pro or whatever it was, and OneDrive, you know, there was branding confusion there around Skype for Business and which version you were on and where it ran and all that sort of stuff. Then you've got other things like Teams coming along as well. You've got Skype Meet Room meeting systems. You've got all these other brands. So it is like a big bucket of logos and brands. And I will give Microsoft credit. They are trying now to bring this back together. But it's not going to be easy, and it's going to be a couple of years of suffering and pain for us, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too.
So I guess where things are kind of going with this is right now where, you know, we have Skype for Business. Everybody's, not everybody, but a lot of people use Skype for Business, either online or on-premises. And that's a big distinction, right? When you say, are you using Skype for Business, you can't just leave it at that. You've got to say, are you using it on the online offering from Office 365? Or are you running it on-premises yourself? Or are you running a hybrid setup between the two? I mean, it's really complicated. Mm. And I'm no Skype for Business server on-prem pro or expert, but it is a complicated product. You've got PBX integration, how you get phone numbers, lines in and out of your company, phones on, like IP phones on desks, dialing rules, routing rules, all of these things. It's there's a lot to it. And I'm only tip of the iceberg kind of stuff with this. I mean, got MVPs that spend their entire life dealing with on-prem deployments of this stuff. But yeah, that's the first point of contention or confusion, right, is the difference between on-prem and online. And I'm an online customer. We don't have any on-prem Skype for Business, but lots of companies do have on-prem.
Yeah, and it's interesting too kind of how they got there as well, because I know that there was, we'll talk a little bit about this in a second, but there's the whole concept of being able to not just do like, you know, video calls and voice calls, where everything lives just inside of Skype for Business, but being able to bridge that world, that digital world, with someone who's going to pick up a telephone and make, like, you know, dial the 555-555-1212, dial a real telephone number and being able to join into a call. And prior to Microsoft doing that, there were a lot of companies that were trying to offer that kind of a service, to where some of them were really good, but some of them weren't. But it was a lot of, you know, we will host your a phone number in like a digital place. I mean, I think that's called a PSTN. Is that what it is?
Which part, sorry?
The part where you actually, if I pick up a phone and I want to call in somewhere, that number lives at a PSTN or is that a PBX?
That PSTN calling is the in and outbound, you know, the ability to call in and outbound, basically.
Okay.
And, yep.
Yeah, so I know that there were some companies that were doing that. Like, where I remember I started using, I used Vonage for voice over IP, and I had a work number, and we had our house number as well. I worked out of my house, so I needed a work number that was separate from my personal number, so I knew when not to answer the phone on a weekend or in the night. And then there were companies that were trying to offer that as a hosted solution instead of you hosting it yourself, which is what I wanted. I wanted to be able to say, I have a work phone number. It goes straight to voicemail or routes to specific people based on certain criteria. I want it all hosted that way. And I know that, you know, that's when Microsoft started to get into the idea of, okay, why don't we do this? Why don't we have a Skype for Business that allows you to have your phone number to where someone can call that number and it can effectively call you through Skype for Business so that you're sitting at your computer, a normal phone call, and they can join in conference calls or you can call out or whatever. Basically, use your computer like a real telephone without having to pick up the phone and make a separate call there. I found that to be super, super helpful. But getting to that point where it was so incredibly hard.
Oh, I can imagine. And especially when you're dealing with telephony providers and phone number porting and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So before we get into how, you know, some of the things you've learned with moving your numbers around in the past and the lessons you had and the way we run, maybe we should let's just spend a minute sort of recapping what's currently available in Office 365 and what your choices are, and then dive into some of the things that we've learned as we've done this. So although you can deploy all the stuff on-prem, you can also get them in Office 365. And there are really three SKUs that let you do this, three products in Office 365. That you've got the E3, E5, and also E1 as well, I believe, gives you some of this stuff. I'm not sure about all of it, but certain pieces of it. Again, yeah, the SKU strategy can be complicated. Anyway, for the purposes of this discussion, let's just talk about E3 and E5. So I guess the first thing that those plans give you is Skype for Business. And that's kind of the first part of this puzzle, right? The ability to log in with Skype for Business and IM and call just your peers within the organization. That's sort of the just getting off the starting blocks, being able to search for somebody and IM them, need Skype for Business, obviously. And so with those plans, you get the client and you can download them and install them and start chatting to your peers within the organization. And also, depending on your setup in Office 365, you can turn on federation, which means your ability to chat to and call people outside of the organization.
Right.
And when I say call in this context, I just mean a VoIP call to another Skype for Business user from Skype for Business. So that could be within your organization or outside your organization at a partner organization or a customer or whatever. They have to be using Skype for Business there.
Calling via an app.
Yes, calling via the app. Yeah, correct. Or instant message. And so that's what, you know, the federation capabilities give you. So that's just the getting off the blocks part. If you want to make phone calls to landlines, for example, that's when you need PSTN calling. So that's effectively, you want to make an outbound call to a phone number, to a landline number, you need to make an outbound PSTN call.
So the way I think of that is that bridges the app and the telephone piece together. So that's
correct,
what bridges.
Yeah.
That lets me either do telephone to telephone via Skype for Business or telephone to app or vice versa via Skype for Business.
Correct. Yeah. And so what you do is you have to pick calling plans. So in Office 365, you say, hey, for Mary and Bob, I want to give them a domestic calling plan, which costs an additional amount of money and means that they can make unlimited domestic calls to, let's just take the US, for example, because I have experience with this one, you know, to US-based numbers. And I believe it's really North America, I think, for the domestic plan in Office 365. But let's just say domestic for this purpose. Or you can choose the international plan, which means people can make calls internationally. And I believe there are caps on the number of minutes included, but I think it's a reasonable amount. Can't remember off the top of my head exactly, but it's quite a few. Anyway, so you assign calling plans, which is an additional subscription per user in Office 365 to be able to make outbound calls to phone numbers and things. So for example, in E5, a domestic calling plan is $12 a month per user and an international one is $24 a month. So it's not cheap, right? It's it can add up significantly per user. So for example, $12, I mean, that's as much as the rest of Office 365 for, you know, that's as much as I think an E3 or a, I might be getting this wrong now. It's pretty up there in terms of, I think E3 is actually more like $20 a month. But anyway, it's a significant portion of the cost, right? So in E5, it's really simple. You just get calling plans, you assign them to users, Bob's your uncle, away you go, right? If you're in E3, you also need to add the thing called the phone system, which is the fancier marketing term for the cloud PBX is what I understand. Mm-hmm. And that's an additional $8 a month. So now you're up to $20 a month for domestic and $32 a month for international calling. If you want to assign it to users on E3, that's quite a lot as well. But that stuff's included in E5. And then the same goes for E1. You need the phone system for $8 a month, and then it's $12 or $24 for the calling plan.
So I can give you an update on the numbers here, because this is what I have. And this is like, I have an E5 license in order to be able to do the telephone number and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But that gives me the ability to have for my user to be able to use that. That costs $35 a month for an
Holy
E5.
Holy smoke.
Yeah, so I pay $35 a month for an E5. And then you have to have a calling plan to go along with it. And my domestic calling plan is $12 per user per month. So,
oh yes, you're on. Yeah, you got the domestic. So that $35 is for the E5, yeah?
That $35 for the E5, plus I have a calling plan. So then, so effectively, my account in Office 365, which gives me all SharePoint Online, Exchange Online, blah, 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 all the, you know, Power BI, all that stuff. It gives me, it is, plus being able to make phone calls, it's cost me $47 a month.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
I mean, it adds up, especially if you're talking about doing it to a large number of users, right? Or for a large number of users.
Hey, just for me, it sucks. $47 a month. It's one of my, heck, you know what? That $47 a month is more than I spend when I was doing all of my backups to AWS from my NAS of like 19 or 20, somewhere between 19 and 22 terabytes every single month. I was still spending less than that a month. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The other option is if you are a Skype for Business hybrid customer or Skype for Business, you have Skype for Business server deployed on premises, there is a scenario where you can hook up your on-prem deployment to your cloud deployment and get into a hybrid setup and then hook up your existing PSTN service provider using your on-prem components, I believe. And so when users want to make a call, it can get routed through that service provider instead of Microsoft providing the calling plan and the numbers and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. You can hook up to an existing provider with that. That sounds really complicated to me for a small business, at least. For a larger business, maybe that's not such a big deal. But now you've got on-prem stuff, you've got phone numbers to deal with and trunking and PSTN and all sorts of stuff and acronyms that I don't really understand.
Well, and people ask me, you know, why would I go about doing this? And to me it was, well, I wanted to have everything under one roof because I found that when one company hosted my PBX, one person hosted the PSTN, when you had all these different things and then it all tied in through Skype for Business, I found that it was easy for something to break down and someone go, no, that's not our fault. Make sure these guys have configured this. Now it's just like, you know what? I'm Office 365 and I have a telephone number and Office 365 has it and they have my voice and everything. So all I need is an internet connection. If anything screws up, I open a support ticket and say, I pay for this, fix it. You can talk to anybody you want inside and get it all done. And I may overpay for it, but I don't have to worry about it. But then again, now I'm starting to wonder, do I even need the telephone number at all? So
yeah,
different story.
So you think you've got it all sorted. You can make calls, you can receive calls, you can allocate phone numbers to users so that people from outside can call a number, and that's all dealt with Cloud PBX and PSTN calling stuff. And then you want to hold a meeting.
Oh my God.
Then there's another plan, which is the PSTN conferencing plan, or the new fancy word is audio conferencing. And so if you want that, if you're on an E5 plan, audio conferencing is included, which gives the ability for external people to dial in using local phone numbers to your online meeting externally, right? So say I was in New Zealand, I would get a number that was in New Zealand, I think, that I could call in, you know, toll free into the meeting. right? Or if I was in, you know, wherever in the world, they've got local numbers. 400 cities across the globe have numbers. So it's not everywhere, but it's a good spread.
Sure.
So E5, that's included. If you're on E1 or E3, then you add another $4 a month fee on top of that. And that gets you those dial-in numbers for your audio conferencing. So this is kind of like, you know how when you do, say, a GoToMeeting or something like that, they can give you a phone number and you dial into the conference and ask for a PIN and blah, blah, and you get in. Same kind of deal. Dial in for audio conferencing meetings. E5 included, E1 and 3, pay for it. $4 a month. These are all US dollars as well, as of today. So you've got your phone numbers, you've got your calling plans, you've got your audio conferencing or your audio, you know, your meeting solution, all of that. It all adds up, right? It's starting to cost a fair amount. And it's reasonably straightforward if you're in the cloud. So if you're an Office 365 customer and you're just an Office 365 customer like you are, right? Mm-hmm. You've got your E5, you go add a calling plan to it. You've got your cloud PBX stuff is all hooked up. The phone service, I think they call it now, right? It's all hooked up. And then, I don't know, do you also subscribe to your PSTN conferencing? I guess you don't use it for audio conferencing.
I don't know. No, I don't do the PSTN conferencing.
But you can manage it all through Office 365 dashboard, you know, the admin portal. You go allocate, you can get phone numbers allocated to you. You can go allocate phone numbers to people. You've got the emergency response details in there about which office people are in. So when they dial 911, they know where to go, hopefully. Mm. Things like that. It's actually reasonably straightforward. I mean, the UI is pretty clunky in O365, or the Skype for Business UI is pretty clunky, which brings up kind of the next part of where things are going and how painful this is going to be for us for a few years.
I was really hoping to see like almost like a flow chart. Like, do you need a telephone number and you want to host it in 365? Here's what you need. Here's the critical path. And then here's the other stuff that you can add on to it and what else you could use. Like, if you just need a phone number, here's this, and this is what it gets you. And if you want to be able to do this, you need to add this on and then this on, but you absolutely need this. That took me a couple of days to figure out to get that last story.
It's really not obvious, is it? Mm-hmm. It's pretty painful. Okay, so you got everything sorted. Then comes along Microsoft Teams. And you're like, wait a second. I can chat with people, like I am people. When Teams first came out, this is the first thing people said. They were like, hold on, so now I've got another one-to-one chat thing in Teams. I can chat to people with instant message in Teams. Am I supposed to use that or am I supposed to use Skype for Business?
Yeah.
And everybody was like, what? And then I can't remember exactly when it was. I think it was at Ignite last year. So it was October, was that? Something like that. September or October. I think it was October. Microsoft came out and said, yes, all the speculation and rumor is correct. We are going to be discontinuing Skype for Business and moving those capabilities into Microsoft Teams and blow everything up. And to give you a little insight into, for those of you who are listening, Microsoft's mentality here is the Microsoft Teams team sort of took over the universe in that world, and the Skype for Business team and the Skype team sort of ended up in that whole group. And so let's just say Teams won out. And this really creates a bit of a predicament because, at least in my view, because people are still rolling out Skype for Business because they need voice and chat and all that sort of stuff today. But at the same time, Microsoft is saying, no, don't use that. Use Microsoft Teams. And if you've used Teams, it's a good product. It's getting there, right? But it's not done. And so, sure, you can one-on-one chat people. You can text back and forth and send messages and all that sort of stuff. You can also voice call other people. That's no problem. You can video call people and you can screen share and stuff like that. You couldn't initially, but they've added all those things to Teams. And then more recently, they've also been rolling out meetings inside Teams. So now you can schedule a meeting and conduct your meeting inside Teams. And you can invite external participants to that and all that. But it's not obvious how you do all this, especially given in Outlook, there's a online meeting button, and when you add it, it adds a Skype for Business schedule. And you're like, how do I create a meeting in Teams? Turns out you've got to go into Teams to schedule a Teams meeting. You can't do that from Outlook just yet. And that's not automatic. And there's issues about how you receive calls using inbound and outbound calls with Teams. And there's PowerShell you've got to run to hook it up so that people receive calls on Teams as opposed to on their Skype for Business client. And I'm just going to come out and say it. It's a complete cluster right now.
It is. It really is. It's funny you say that too, because last week we were at the SP Fest DC. We did a panel, and at the end, a guy asked a question about where do you see Teams going in the future? Because quite frankly, today, it's a complete cluster. I don't use Teams. Someone tells me about one of these new features, and I go into Teams, and I am confused as anybody on how it's all. It is not, to me, it is not intuitive how it's set up. The people that tell me, oh yeah, this is totally intuitive, are the ones using Teams. When you're not in Teams, it doesn't make sense to me, because you have to be in a team. So do I have to be in a specific team to make calls to that team? Or can I make calls to, like, could I make a call to you the same way that you and I can do with Skype for Business? And if I can, how do I do it? And do you have to be in the Hyperfish team and I have to be in the Voitano's team? Or do we both have to be in the Hyperfish or both have to be in the Voitano's team to do it? And
currently, I mean, this is the level of confusion there is, right? Currently, my understanding, and I could be wrong, and maybe one of our listeners could correct us if we're getting this wrong. My understanding is we've got to be in the same team, like company.
Lowercase t.
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And that cross teams, cross company calling instant message with Teams is not possible right now.
That's called Skype for Business.
Yeah, well, Federation, you can do it Skype for Business. You can't in Teams just yet. So except if you schedule a meeting, you can invite external participants to that meeting.
See, it's all those. This is the thing that just drives me crazy about Microsoft.
You need a really, really big sort of flowchart on the wall here.
Yeah. So
I don't know if you can see this.
I can totally see it. CJ's gone back and he's now working on the whiteboard from his room. And frankly, that's about how it looks to me. It looks like two cherries hanging off of a tree.
Yeah. It looks like two cats fighting in a bag.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, snakes wrestling in a sock.
Oh, man. Okay, so half glass full kind of optimist part of me says,
it's getting better.
It's getting better. And maybe in 2 years, we'll be okay. But for now, this line of Microsoft's about just use Teams is complete and utter bollocks in my view, because tech customers and companies need something, especially when it comes to IM, voice, video, and meetings, that is 100% bulletproof every single time.
So here's my two cents on this. I'm not a Teams, capital T. I'm not a Microsoft Teams person. I'm a Slack person. I like Slack more and it works more for my scenarios. That doesn't mean Teams is a bad product. That doesn't mean I don't like it. It just means it doesn't work for me, because the outside organization bit to it is the thing that I most need to be able to even try it out. Yes. Otherwise, I'm playing with Microsoft Teams with a team of two. One of them is only going to be in it when I ask her to go get in it, because she works with me. So that is not me saying anything negative about Microsoft Teams. Now, the part that is frustrating to me is that I get that what they wanted to do was to do more of the MVP style release. They wanted to release it. They wanted to try it out, see how everything works. They wanted to see adoption. They wanted to iterate fast. That's all fine and good. But to me, the point of them doing a quote announcement that says, Skype for Business is going away, it's all going to be Microsoft Teams in the future, was way too premature, number one, or it was way too official to be the way it was presented. It was maybe if it's like a Q&A session going, yes, we eventually are going to end up moving all of our stuff to Teams, but we have a long way to go. We're not ready to talk about that yet. The fact they did it as like a press release was indicated that by now we would be there, or by, you know, June we would be there. The part that what I really wish they had done is that they had kept more of this meetings and Skype for Business and all that stuff. They had waited for all of that stuff to really be done instead of piece by piece by piece. To say, okay, now it's done. Now we'll say you can move your meetings, you can move your cross-organization meetings, your internal meetings, your video calls, your meetings where you're inviting one of your customers to come into it. All of that should have been done at one time for me. Calling and all that kind of stuff should have been done at one time. They should not have tried to go through and piecemeal this stuff now, because today, you know, hearing what you just said, that was news to me. And I'm in the Office 365 world. I live and breathe this stuff, and I miss that part as well. So to me, it just seems like I don't go over to Teams to try it out, because it's, you can't tell. It's like, okay, I got to spend 15 minutes trying to figure out, can I do what I want to do here? No, I can't. Okay, I'm going to go focus on the stuff that actually works right now.
Yeah. Well, that's what infuriates me about the whole story, right? Is no company can use Teams right now for this.
Mm-hmm.
No company in their right mind, in my view, would use Teams for anything except the basic Teams functionality,
yep.
right? Not for videos, not for meetings, not for calling, not for IM, because you can't do it cross-company, you can't do it with external participants. There's all these weird caveats. Goodness knows how you actually schedule a meeting in a bulletproof way that works every time without having to switch between different clients and copy. Like, I just don't know how anybody can say that that is a enterprise-ready solution currently.
I completely agree.
If they'd come out and said, hey, our roadmap is to put all of our effort into Teams going forward, and all of our, you know, we're going to bring feature parity to Teams. We're going to do client consolidation in terms of desktop clients and phone clients and all that sort of stuff. And in the background, we're going to make it simpler for IT to administer and all that sort of stuff. But we're not there yet, and it's going to take a couple of years or however long it's going to take them to get there. That would have made a lot more sense to me. But yep. this whole, all our eggs are in the Teams bucket and screw you for if you're going to use Skype for Business, it's just not realistic. And it's doing everybody a disservice, I think, at the moment.
Completely agree.
So my advice, use Skype for Business. I would for now. If I was an Office 365 customer, I'd be using Skype for Business for conducting meetings, instant messages and video. That said, Teams is getting better. Like, I was an external participant on a Teams meeting the other day and it was flawless. The video quality was good. The audio quality was good. It was actually a reasonable experience, but it would be super confusing if I wasn't a techie. Like, seeing that brand and like, what was this? And like, how do I get invited? And how do I send somebody an invite? I just got no idea how to do that as my mother, for example.
Yeah. And not even as your mother. I mean, just trying to jump into a call, like a normal meeting with people who are actually in the space for it. I get confused by it. If I'm getting confused by it with the stuff that I can keep straight in my head, I think that there, I can only imagine how bad it would be for a like you trying to go through and convince one of your a potential customer to jump on a meeting. The one thing you want to do is, no. We want to have the least frictions possible to jump into a call. I hear what you say about using Skype for Business for your calls and everything. I'm going to give you another option. This is what I do. And this is not a negative to Microsoft, but I use it because it just freaking works. And this is one of the reasons why I'm considering canceling my Skype for Business stuff. And I'm only really holding on to it to see where Teams goes, so I'm not moving things around yet again in another 6 months or so. So I use Zoom. So if you go to zoom.us, that's what you and I use to go through to host these webinars, or sorry, to host these, to record our podcast recordings. And it effectively works the exact, when you boil it down to the core features, it works the same way. So you create an account, you can have a free account and anybody can go that you can use. Like, you have an account and you can connect to the one that I use for a meeting that I host, right? And it doesn't cost you a dime. But what I do is I pay $15 per user per month. And that gives me the ability to create meetings and to record meetings. And it gives me a certain amount of storage in the cloud. I can download my meetings and delete the stuff to get more storage up in the cloud. And I can do that for pure meeting. So when I add in 15 people, it doesn't matter. Organizations don't matter. It's whoever's got a link to be able to get to the meeting. And if I choose the passcode, they can dial in via phone. They can choose to use their computer recording, blah, blah. It all just works. The thing I like about it, one of the things I really like about it though, is that once I've set that meeting up and I have that call created, that anybody can use and anybody dials in, we're all kind of on the same boat. I can mute everybody. So that problem that you run into, like the Skype for Business call you and I were in right before we recorded, where you kept hearing other people jumping into the call and like leaving their microphones unmuted. You have no control over what's going on with those people, or except to reactively mute them. What you can also do is I can say in my meeting that no one can go through and unmute themselves. Only I can unmute. I can only unmute them when they come back in, and they can optionally all turn their videos on and we can see all that stuff. Then if I want to use that to turn it more from a meeting where we're all sitting around a round table, right? Think about it. There's two different ways of doing these things. There's a meeting where if we're all in a conference room, we're all talking to each other. And then there's like a presentation. You go to a conference, there's one person at the front of the room or four people at the front of the room presenting to 100 people out in the field. That's a webinar. And with that, I pay an extra $40 a month on top of my account to be able to broadcast to up to 100 people and have one host for the meeting. So I can do a meeting. This is what I end up doing with Voitanos. I can end up hosting that and broadcast those meetings. And one of the users could be that I link it up and broadcast to Facebook Live or YouTube Live. Now, once I do that, I have no information about the people who actually connected via Facebook Live or YouTube Live. It just counts as like, you know, when we do one of our live broadcasts, we end up doing a webinar. So we're using my account to log in. We're using my webinar add-on to be able to do up to 100 people. And then when we connect it to Facebook Live, now I've got an additional 99 people that can join the webinar directly, but 2 million on Facebook could join the Facebook Live part of it, and it still only counts as one stream for me. I just get no details about those people that are connecting.
Yeah.
So to me, I use Zoom for this. The client's great. It's seamless. It works fantastic on a phone. The quality of it is so much better. It just, for me, I really like the experience, and I'm getting very close to the point of just ditching my E5 and dropping back down, or at least getting rid of my calling plan and ditching all the Skype for Business stuff. And then deciding to, you know what, I'm just going to drop down. I use Skype and use Office 365 for everything but conference calling and stuff and hosting meetings and stuff like that. And I use Zoom for everything else.
Yeah. I think that's what a lot of people are doing, honestly. Like Zoom has just taken off in the last 12 months, I guess. It was started by an ex-Cisco guy, I think. And if I've got that right. And it seems to be really, really taking over a lot of market share right now.
Yep.
Yes. So it is messy. It's going to take us a couple of years to get through this, if not three. The Skype team have historically moved at an absolute snail's pace. And they're probably not moving at a snail's pace internally. They're probably working really hard. It's just really hard.
Yeah.
Like they've got a lot of legacy, a lot of on-prem, a lot of complexity with PSTNs and PBXs and inbound and outbound stuff and telephony and SIP and all these things. It's really tough technology. It's been around for a long time. So it's probably really complicated, and it doesn't surprise me it's hard. But that said, that shouldn't be our problem.
No, it shouldn't. It shouldn't. And I wish that all the audio and all that stuff would just get frozen and just say, you know what? Until we're ready to say we're done.
It freezes regularly, dude. What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah,
about?
No, that's true.
Anyway,
I got other features, the reason why I like Zoom over Skype for Business right now. But I mean, I would love to see Teams. I'd love to not have to be able to use to pay for Zoom. And I'd love to, you know, use my existing Office 365 subscription to be there. And we're not at that point today. I agree with you. I think we are at least a year away to see Teams have feature parity from what I want, what I get out of Zoom, and maybe even more than that. So
yeah,
let me say that again. Maybe we'll never get to that point because maybe that's not the audience.
Correct. That's a very good point.
I very well may not be the audience for, it's true for a lot of stuff with Office 365. So
here's my other point though, about this whole SKU strategy and the complexity, right? Microsoft dump a bunch of this telephony stuff in E5, right? You can get it on E3, but E5 is kind of like the shiny SKU where everything goes in and it's got all the stuff. That's where Microsoft sales put all of their effort into selling E5. Who buys E5? Big companies buy E5, right? Who needs telephony in their organization? Newsflash, not big companies. Small companies.
Yeah.
Medium-sized companies. They want complexity taken out of their video, audio, and IM stuff, right? Big companies have phones on desks still. They've got big, complex PBX calling stuff, trunking, SIP, telephony, doodads, and contractors and all that. To me, it's all around the wrong way. Why isn't Microsoft selling cloud-based telephony to small companies? Because they're the ones that need it. They're the ones that want to get the dudes that come and service your photocopier and fax machine out of doing phones on desks so that you can take calls from sitting wherever you are in the world, right? It perplexes me that the calling is being pitched to big companies when small companies are really the target market, at least in my humble opinion.
Yeah. Nah, I'm right there with you, man.
Like we're a small company. We need telephony. We go buy E5 because...
You have to.
Because we have to, right? And maybe that's the goal. But then why not pitch it to small businesses, charge what E5 costs anyway?
Yeah.
Anyway, complicated.
I'm with you, man.
All right, enough about calling. Let's move on to some more fun stuff.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
All right, AC, what do you got for us? You got picks?
Yeah, I got a pick, and I'm going to nuke you.
Yep. You probably are looking at this link.
Did you see this?
You're literally going to nuke me.
Yeah. So nuclear fusion is on the brink of being realized. Say,
is this one of those things that I hear like every year, or is this actually for real this time?
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, you always keep hearing the same kind of stuff like this, but it's interesting and it's my pick. So
okay.
The dream of nuclear fusion is on the brink of being realized, according to a major new U.S. initiative that says it'll put fusion power on the grid within 15 years. So we're almost there. This is a collaboration between a private company, I believe it's called Commonwealth Fusion Systems, and MIT. So here's the idea of what they're doing. Fusion, so we've got, you know, fission right now, and the way current nuclear power works is the same way like an atom bomb works, but it's just more controlled, which is...
Usually.
You've got Fukushima, we'll set that aside. So generally what you end up doing is you have a radioactive mass and you bombard it to get it to split, and that starts a chain reaction. And the idea is to be able to control that chain reaction to keep it from going, well, to...
Explosive.
To being a chain reaction.
Yeah.
And the reason why we use that for power is that, I was going to say it's clean, but that's debatable. It generates the energy that is released from splitting apart the atoms when you bombard it with the other mass. It generates a lot of heat, and that heat heats up water, which turns to steam, which turns the turbines, which creates the energy. Yeah. And then that water condenses, goes back to being a liquid, goes back into the pool, and then you've got the cycle that goes over and over and over.
Yeah.
And the idea that so what fusion does is different. Fusion, what that does is it takes two objects, instead of splitting them apart, it forces them together. And the way it does this, so it works on the basic concept of forging lighter elements together to form a heavier element. So like when hydrogen atoms are squeezed hard enough, they fuse together to make helium, and that liberates a ton of energy in the process, more energy than splitting it apart does. But this process produces net energy only at extreme temperatures at hundreds of millions of degrees Celsius, a lot hotter than the center of the sun and far hotter than any solid material that we have withstand today. So what scientists are doing now is they're using very powerful magnetic fields to hold in place the hot plasma that is generated from this. It's like a gaseous kind of soup of subatomic particles. And what that they use those magnets to stop it from coming in contact with...
So they sort of levitate it or something.
Kind of like that, yeah, using magnets to do that. Yeah, so it's being able to keep it from coming in contact with the entire chamber there. The newly available material that it's kind of like steel tape, they said, that's coated with like a certain kind of a compound. It allows scientists to produce smaller, more powerful magnets. And this is potentially going to reduce the amount of energy that needs to be put in to the fusion reactor to get it up off the ground. So it's the higher the magnetic field, the more compact you can squeeze the fuel. It's really interesting. And from a geeky side, it's really cool. The nice thing about fusion as well is that unlike burning fossil fuels like coal and natural gas, unlike for a fission reactor, we use uranium, those resources are going to be depleted or they're incredibly expensive. But
they're also really kind of toxic.
They're very toxic, whereas the fuel that's used for a fusion reactor is hydrogen. And that's incredibly abundant supply. And it's explosive when you put it together, but it's not as dangerous to handle as the other ones.
Yeah.
And there's no greenhouse gases that are produced or hazardous radioactive waste that's produced. That's a big deal. So it's much cleaner.
Well, I will look with great interest whether that comes to fruition.
See in 15 years.
Yeah, to fruition. There you go. Okay, my pick is definitely not as exciting unless you're a developer, and it's a command line emulator called Commander, CMDER.net. And I'll paraphrase off the website. Commander is a software package created out of pure frustration over the absence of a nice console emulator on Windows. It is based on amazing software and spiced up with the Monokai color scheme and a custom command prompt layout looking sexy from the start. You can stick it on a USB stick, and it comes with Git and all that stuff built in. So if you're looking for a better command window than the one that comes with Windows, definitely give Commander CMDER.net a shot.
It's what
it's
I recommend.
Sweet. You stick it on a stick.
What I like about it is that it allows you to, it respects both bash commands and
Windows ones.
And like Windows ones. So you can do DIR and get a directory listing, or you can do LS and get a directory listing like you would on bash, and tell my SharePoint framework developers to use Commander, because a lot of the samples that you see are giving you command, like commands for get and all that stuff. The syntax is mostly for bash. So
yeah, that's really nice. There's another one called Hyper, which is more like it's more of a kind of a shell for your shell, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
But anyway, this is super nice. I've been playing around with it. It's really good.
Yep. Yeah, Hyper's really cool. I know a couple people use that one.
All right, AC, we've banged on long enough. They've listened to us for quite a while now, talking about how to listen to us and call other people and all that. If you have questions and comments about the show, definitely get in touch with us. We'd love to hear your Skype for Business stories and Teams rollout stories if you've got them. So definitely get in touch with us if you have an interesting story to tell.
Absolutely.
But AC, thanks again for another great show. Great to have you back on the show. And we'll talk again next week.
Absolutely. Good to see you again, CJ.
Catch up.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.